Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Craig Unger. We're going to be talking about his excellent book, The House of Bush, The House of Sod. And I was just reading Human Events this morning, and there was an article in there saying, oh, anybody who says that there was some sort of a special arrangement to fly out the members of the Saudi royal family and the bin Laden family immediately after the September 11th attack, they just don't know what they're talking about. This is a rumor that's been going around. And well, I think that if you read this book, you'll find this is not a rumor, that everything is being done to confuse the issue. But Craig, why don't you explain to our listeners what really did happen immediately after the September 11th attack, as far as the members of the Saudi royal family, some who were certainly had some very questionable relationships to Al-Qaeda, and the members of the bin Laden family, many of them who were living here on a regular basis.
Right. Well, it's worth remembering the extent to which American skies were shut down. American skies had not been this empty since the days of the Wright brothers. No one could fly. Bill Clinton and Al Gore were out of the country, and they were not allowed to fly back into the United States. I actually found a fellow who was waiting for a heart transplant, and he was in Seattle, Washington, and the heart was being flown in to him from Anchorage, Alaska, but when it crossed back into American airspace, it was forced down by American military aircraft. That's how tightly controlled American airspace was.
Did he ever get the heart transplant? I never did find that out.
Well, he did. I actually have it in the footnotes.
Okay.
A helicopter brought it in to him just in time, as it turned out. But it was forced down 80 miles short of its destination.
By fighter planes. I mean, the fighter planes were there, and nobody was going to be flying.
Right, absolutely. And yet, on September 13th at around 1:30 p.m., I found a flight that started in Tampa, Florida, going to Lexington, Kentucky, that carried three Saudis on it. And I spoke to two men who were on the flight as security guards. They were spoke to me on the record. And this was the first of eight airplanes I found that stopped in 12 American cities. They picked up about 140 Saudis, including more than two dozen members of the bin Laden family who are relatives of Osama bin Laden.
Well, now, of course, had they opened up the flights for commercial flights at that time, opened up the air?
Well, commercial flights were just starting to reopen, but private aviation was still closed, and this first flight was a Learjet. We do know that it did get, it needed White House approval, and we do know, in fact, that it was discussed in the Situation Room of the White House. I interviewed Richard Clark, and he also corroborated this in his testimony before the 9/11 Commission. The entire operation took about 2 weeks, and by the time it was over, flights were up in the air again. But the point is that this required the White House to make a decision. That's the essential point. And it required them to decide between, are they going to do a favor for their Saudi friends, or they're really going to get to the bottom of 9/11. In talking about this, it's important to understand that I'm not suggesting that all these people on the flights were guilty by any means. One has to presume innocence. But at the same time, if you're going to have a serious investigation of even the most commonplace murder, you talk to the friends and relatives of the perpetrator. And
hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Craig Unger, and he's written a fascinating book called The House of Bush, The House of Saud. And in that, he opens with the story of the gentleman who's trying to get his needs a heart transplant, and a heart transplant is being flown in. And on the way, coming from Canada or perhaps from Alaska, why the plane is intercepted by fighter planes, because nobody's getting in the air at this time, initially right after September 11th, and yet within 2 days, why the Saudi family and the people from Bin Laden family are beginning to be picked up and rounded up and taken out of the country. Now, the point they made in Human Events was, oh yes, but they had all been cleared by the FBI, as if somehow they'd all been questioned and made sure that any evidence there would be acceptable. But is that really true?
No, it's not. I mean, in fact, if you look at the 9/11 Commission, it does have a staff statement on this. And one of the things they say is that over 110 of those 142 people were not interrogated at all by the FBI. In addition, I have on my website, I was able to obtain passenger lists for four of these flights. And if your audience is interested in looking at them, you can find them on houseofbush.com. That's my website, houseofbush.com. And if you look at the very first person on the first passenger list, it's a name that really startled me. And the name may be unfamiliar to most listeners. It's Prince Ahmed bin Salman. And he's a man who was very well known in horse racing circles because his horse, War Emblem, won the Kentucky Derby in 2002. But he was interesting to me for a completely different reason, and that is an Al-Qaeda operative was captured in 2002, and when he was questioned by the CIA, he claimed that Prince Ahmed was actually a go-between the Saudi royal family and Al-Qaeda, that he had ties to Al-Qaeda, that he had advanced knowledge of 9/11. So if that's true, it's absolutely extraordinary. Here you have a case in which the White House seemed to clear people, including a guy with ties to Al-Qaeda who had allegedly advanced knowledge of 9/11, and let him go without questioning whatsoever.
And, of course, we know that when the first report came out, that was from the Joint House-Senate Intelligence Select Committee, why the Bush White House insisted on censoring that report. Now, why would they want to censor it and take out any reference to the Saudis and so many other things, a great deal more than just the Saudis, because I have the report. I thought that they were interested in bringing out the truth for the American people. We'll be right back. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Craig Unger, and we're talking about his book, The House of Bush, The House of Saud. And he's simply been pointing out that there were a number of people were on these planes. One of them was a prince that had been later identified as having been somebody who was an informant or somebody who was an Al-Qaeda terrorist, identified this Saudi who was right there at the top of this list.
He's the first name on that first list if you go to my website at houseofbush.com. He took that flight from Lexington, Kentucky to London, England, out of the United States. These were the flights that were okayed by the Bush White House.
Yeah, but this was the man who, at least according to an informant, said that this man was a go-between between the Saudi royal family and Al-Qaeda and actually knew about the attack ahead of time?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
And, of course, we're just not hearing about this in the media for some reason or other. Do you mention that in the book?
Yes, I do. I mean, I think the media has been very, very docile. It's been very weird, really. It's interesting, this flood of books that have been critical of the Bush administration, and I guess I'm part of that wave. But in many ways, it seems like books are doing the job that the media used to do, that print newspapers and broadcast media used to do in the days of Watergate and so on. But I think the media in many ways has been very docile. It has not been asking the tough questions that reporters in Washington seem that they want to get that interview with Donald Rumsfeld or whomever. And if you're going to get that interview, you better not ask the tough questions or you're not going to get the interview.
Well, I have to read most of these books for what I do, Abby, and I will tell you that yours is one of the better books out there.
Thank you.
It really is. It's got a tremendous amount of information. And what was really amazing to me was the background of the Saudi financial impact on the United States. One of the most shocking things to me in the book was the fact that the Saudis have invested in this country about $860 billion, according to Mr. Unger. $860 billion, the entire country is only worth $7 or $8 trillion. This is unbelievable.
Right. They own a significant amount of the United States. If they pulled their money, it would have severe repercussions. I also think, I mean, one of the interesting things, too, is where that money went. And I was interested not just in the vast majority of course, goes into huge companies like Citigroup and that are on the New York Stock Exchange and so on. But I was most interested in when they would put it in little struggling companies that happened to be tied to powerful politicians. And I'm speaking of the Bush family, of course. I traced a total of $1.4 billion in investments and contracts that went from the House of Saud to companies in which the Bushes and their allies have significant positions. And this is just unprecedented in the history of the White House. Never before have you had a president of the United States. In this case, you actually have two George Bushes who have been so close to another foreign power. I kept looking for another precedent to put it in context, and there simply is none.
And, of course, the situation was that the Saudis, or at least the people, were actually investing in Carlyle Group, and certainly Bush was a consultant for Carlyle, Henry Kissinger, and James Baker III, the president's friend, and Frank Carlucci. And weren't the Saudis heavily invested in Carlyle, this international holding company?
Yeah, the former President Bush and James Baker would go there fairly regularly for Carlyle Group. They raised about $80 million. And in addition, I think well over $1 billion in contracts came from the Saudis into companies owned by the Carlyle Group. So they had a significant arrangement. I kept trying to figure out a way to explain the meaning of this. And a lot of people, this topic, obviously, the relationship between the Bushes and the Saudis, is sort of an untouchable topic that's outside the comfort zone. I think a lot of people immediately start thinking conspiracy. In fact, I don't see it that way at all. This is business. There is no conspiracy. It's $1.4 billion worth of business. And if you think about it, I don't know. I certainly have never done $1.4 billion worth of business. I don't know if you have. But believe me, if you have customers, clients who bring in about $1.4 billion worth of business, you may well regard them in a favorable light. And my contention really is that the Bushes felt that way about the Saudis, and as a result, they weren't asking the tough questions about the Saudi role in terrorism. In other words, I mean, how can we have a tough fight on terrorism? The Saudis have a huge role in this. It wasn't just that 15 out of 19 hijackers are Saudis, that Osama bin Laden is Saudi. The entire infrastructure of al-Qaeda, its origins were basically Saudi. And yet, here we have the president's family very, very close to the Saudis.
And you mentioned that some of Saudi money went into rescue George W. Bush's ill-fated oil. You know, you mentioned how when George Herbert Walker Bush started drilling, every well came in as a gusher. When George W. Bush tried to do the same thing and parallel his father, why they were all dry holes. So the Saudis came in, really rescued him, didn't they?
Absolutely. You're talking about Harkin Energy, and it was really drilling one dry hole after another. At the time, the price in the late 80s, the price of oil was plummeting, and it was 3 days away from bankruptcy, according to internal documents. And you have to wonder why Saudis, with all the oil in the world, would want to rescue this company. And the only answer I can think of is that a member of the board of directors was named George W. Bush, and at the time, his father was president of the United States, and it was a cheap way of getting some political influence.
And a lot of this is really all about political influence. If you can get in to see the president or get your picture taken with the president, that makes it a lot more important back in Saudi Arabia, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And the recent revelations about Prince Bandar give a sense of exactly what it means. I mean, here you have a series of favors that are extraordinary to me. I mean, if you look at the flight out after 9/11, that was a huge national security crisis, and it looks like we're taking care of the White House is taking care of the Saudis, not taking care of American national security interests. In addition, you have the recent revelations from Bob Woodward that Prince Bandar actually knew about our war plans in Iraq before our own Secretary of State, that the Saudis have may have a role in determining the next president by lowering the price of oil just before the election.
I thought that was so interesting. In fact, the Saudis are denying why we wouldn't do that. It's just that the price is going to come down. Well, of course, it's going to come down probably just before the election, just like I sort of suspect that we may find those weapons of mass destruction just before the election. Wouldn't that be a coincidence?
Yeah. No, it's a matter of context and timing. I think any president, Republican or Democrat, wants the price of oil to go down. Most Americans do. Of course, we want cheaper gas. That's not the issue so much as context, that because they're such close friends, because the Saudis can merely turn the spigot and lower the price or turn it off and raise the price, that they have enormous control over us and a lot of political leverage as well.
Oh, I thought it was so interesting that a lot of the Saudis would rather live in the United States than live in Saudi Arabia. I don't know why. I mean, the garden spot of Arabia would be Saudi Arabia, but they'd much rather live in Florida or Texas or places like this. And so, really, a lot of the Saudis just came here to live, didn't they, because they preferred it?
Well, it's an extraordinary family in a way. If you think of the House of Saud, just people, I don't know if people realize, the country is named after that family. Saudi Arabia, House of Saud, of course. And they're incredibly rich, and the richest family in the history of the world by far, with tens and tens of billions of dollars. Several of them spend upwards of $100 million merely to redecorate the interior of their private planes. I mean, money is like water for them. And yet you forget that it's an extremely puritanical, extremist, fundamentalist religious philosophy. Wahhabi Islam is one of the most extremist Islamic sects there is. It's the state religion. There's no separation between church and state. So we see two very different sides of the Saudis in a way. When you see Prince Bandar, the Saudi ambassador to the United States, he's sort of a dashing, charming guy who's got magnificent homes all over the world. He flies around in his own private 747, very, very close to the Bushes. He goes hunting with George Bush Sr. He hangs out in Kennebunkport, Maine, with Bush Sr., in Crawford, Texas, with Bush Jr. If you look at the body language and the photos of him with President Bush, this isn't a guy standing in awe of the President of the United States. He is so relaxed. He's just hanging out with his good friend's son, has extraordinary access. Yet it's very different than the reality of Saudi Arabia, which is one of the most repressive, theocratic monarchies you can imagine.
Well, I thought that the picture on the dust cover or the cover of your book, the paper cover of the book, shows, is that Bandar who's holding hands with George W. Bush?
That's actually Crown Prince Abdullah.
Oh,
he is the de facto ruler. But in the Middle East, men do hold hands sometimes, and it's an extraordinary photo in a way, because I think Crown Prince Abdullah looks very, very relaxed, and he's in control, and President Bush looks a little uncomfortable.
It is a very, very shocking picture if you stop and analyze it, and the way it's set out, they sort of emphasize the fact that they're holding hands. I don't know how many of you hold hands with another man, but I can't think when the last time I did that. Maybe except with I can't ever think remember doing that. Maybe with my wife, but not with another man. Anyway, some of the things that you bring out as far as their tremendous wealth here in the United States and their multiple homes, and then this whole issue of getting connections in our government to influence our government. And one of the things that really bothers me is Prince Bandar's wife was apparently funneling money to some of the terrorists, wasn't she?
Well, absolutely. It's again, you hear this excuse over and over again. The Saudis set up all these Islamic charities. It's a part of one of the pillars of Islam that you contribute. Zakat is the Islamic word for charity. And the Saudis are so wealthy that some of them actually give several hundred million dollars a year to charities.
Well, you're going to have to hold that thought because we're going to have to take a break. And when we get back, we'll want to get into the background of the funding of some of the Al-Qaeda terrorists. Our four tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health, despite their fatty diet, because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules, preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements?
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just want to mention that we do carry the Miracle 2 soap products, and if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to try them. We don't make any medical claims for them, but I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without them, and certainly it's helped some of the rash I had, and a lot of other people say the same thing. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Craig Unger. We're talking about his book, The House of Bush, The House of Saud. How can people get your book, Craig?
Well, you can buy it at bookstores. You can buy it on my website at houseofbush.com through Amazon, or most bookstores are carrying it. It's pretty well distributed.
All right, fine. Well, we were talking about Prince Bandar's wife, actually, being involved with financing of a couple of the Al-Qaeda terrorists who were on the planes that crashed into the building. So what's the background there?
Well, one of the five pillars of Islam is called zakat, and it means charity, and charity is supposed to be a part of every Muslim's life. In Saudi Arabia, however, it's become sort of, it's entirely unregulated, and you have this enormous wealth of the Saudi royal family. Many of these are not just, are multi billionaires. For example, Prince Al-Walid has over $20 billion. So it's not unusual for some of the high-ranking royals to give literally hundreds of millions of dollars to charity. But what happens with it is another story. It's completely unregulated. It goes throughout the Islamic world, and much of it, in fact, billions of dollars, has ended up in the hands of terrorists, including Al-Qaeda. And this has been an issue since roughly the middle of the Clinton era. In the mid-90s, the Clinton administration tried to crack down on this, and they started trying to get into the Saudi banking system. They realized what Osama bin Laden was doing. They did actually cause the Saudis to take over one of the biggest banks in Saudi Arabia. Under the Bush administration has been a lot more lenient, unfortunately, I believe. And one of the things that's been extraordinary is here you have friends of the president, Prince Bandar and his wife, who inadvertently have funded terrorists. They funded two of the hijackers of 9/11, and most recently there was another scandal that the entire Saudi embassy, which had its bank accounts at the Riggs National Bank in Washington, had literally been sending hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to terrorists. And this had been going on as late as 2003. So at a certain point, you have to wonder, I with all this stuff, I think it's a very serious charge to say that anyone is knowingly aiding terrorism. And if you're going to make that charge against any member of the Saudi royal family or whomever, you better be able to back it up. At the same time, in terms of sins of omission, in terms of cracking down, the Saudis have just been terrible at that. And they've allowed it to go on for years and years and years after Al-Qaeda began killing Americans. They have been extraordinarily stubborn and unresponsive in terms of cracking it down. It's important to remember, because it's a Wahhabi theocracy, they have to accommodate these militant clerics. So they sort of buy them off, in effect, by giving them charity and so on.
Well, I don't mind if they buy off the clerics. What I object to is the fact that they're buying off the terrorists, and the terrorists are attacking Americans and killing Americans, and it was primarily a Saudi-financed Al-Qaeda that was over here behind what happened on 9/11. And there's nothing to conceal. Why is the Bush administration so afraid for the American people to know it was in the initial Senate Joint Senate Intelligence Committee report? I mean, I would think that we're big people. We ought to know the truth. And when you've got a government that seems to be insistent upon not letting the American people know the truth, I think that's a little scary.
Well, it's been incredibly secretive. In terms of this, the Saudi evacuation that I was talking about earlier, the White House told me again and again and again that these flights did not take place. The FBI told me the flights did not take place. And the FAA told me the flights did not take place. Yet I spoke to people who were on the flights. I got documents that are on my website at houseofbush.com, the passenger list for four of the flights, and I talked to Richard Clark, who later testified under oath that the discussion took place in the Situation Room of the White House to allow the flights to take place.
So there's a conscious effort to mislead the American people. And this article I read in Human Events this morning really had very little truth to it at all, but it was really to reach the conservatives, and most people read Human Events, as you know. They think that if it's there, it's sort of like gospel. Well, I feel that so much of even the conservative press today is not being entirely forthright. They seem to will defend the president, under any circumstances, whether he deserves to be defended or not, and some of what he does is very good. But I think if he does something wrong, the American people have the right to know, and you've certainly brought that out beautifully in your book, The House of Bush, The House of Saud.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, we're going to have to go to a break here, and when we get back, we're going to welcome the calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Our guest, Craig Unger, his book, The House of Bush, The House of Sod. Could you believe that there is an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money. That'll solve our problem. Ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-Based Education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs Hopker and Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment in the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Outcome-Based Education. Once you understand what they're doing to your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I want to mention to the people here in the Monterey Bay area, and of course out across the country if you're listening, that there is going to be something called a conspiracy conference. It's going to be held in the Santa Clara area on Memorial Day weekend. That's the 29th and 30th of May, and I'm not going to be speaking. I spoke last year, but I will be there. I'm going to have a table, but Joyce Riley will be there, and Rodney Stitch, and Eric Huffschmidt, and Dr. Len Horowitz, and a lot of the people we've had on in the past will be speaking. I think it'll be an interesting program, and I hope maybe some of you want to go. If you would like to know more about the conference on the 29th and 30th of May, why, the telephone number is 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999, or go to their website at conspiracycon.com. And I'm going to also mention we're going to have our yearly program. It's going to be in November 6th. It's going to be here in the Monterey Bay area. Those who've been in the past will certainly want to come again. At least I hope you will. That's November 6th, and we've already got the reservations made. So put that down on your calendar here in the Monterey Bay area, November 6th of this year, when the yearly conference of and seminar, all-day seminar of Radio Liberty will be held. And then we want to mention we do carry Phenopoly. Phenopoly is a program designed to teach you or your children, your grandchildren, how to read and spell phonetically. And really, if you look into these programs, most of them are $300-$500. This is $139.95, and about 16 hours you can teach your children or your grandchildren how to read phonetically. Call us at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for Phenopoly. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. We have Jerry calling from Los Angeles. Jerry, do you have a question?
Question and maybe a comment.
Well, let's just get a question because we've got a void full. So do you have a question for our guest?
I'd like to get his comment on the Saudi family funding of this webmaster who was supporting terrorism and networking terrorists on these websites.
Now which webmaster are you speaking of? I've never heard of it.
It was in the New York Times the day before yesterday.
All right. So there is suddenly a webmaster who is pushing on a website a support of terrorism. Is that it?
Yeah, these jihad websites.
Okay.
You know.
Oh, let's get our response. Do you know anything at all about that, Craig?
You know, I'm afraid I need a few more specifics. There's no question that there's been a huge propaganda campaign on the part of the Saudis, and it's really been a $70 billion campaign in the madrasas, the schools, and it goes through PR institutions and huge American lobbying firms. and I'm sure that I know there's some of it on the internet. But other than that, I'm afraid I do not have too much more knowledge.
Now, we know that they have been financing these schools in Pakistan and Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia themselves that are pushing this radical form of Islam. Would that be a fair statement, Craig?
Oh, absolutely. It's the biggest propaganda campaign in the history of the world. It's extraordinary.
But it is actually promoting this violent form of Islam, which has been more or less latent for many, for most of the last century. Anything else you want to ask, Jerry?
Have either of you, I just learned this myself on the local LA radio station, that Jane Harman and another person on the Intelligence Committee is proposing that the United States and the Western and our Western allies give Muslim nations, the Muslim world, $200 billion over the next 10 years.
I haven't heard anything about that, but I think it's a dumb idea. Thanks very much. We don't have the money to even guard our own borders, and we want to give more money away. Let's go to Ben and Salinas. Ben, do you have a question specifically?
Yes, I do. Are we the people really going to stand by and let Mr. Cheney and Mr. Bush testify separately, together and not
together,
under oath, in the 9/11 hearings tomorrow? And then,
Let's get that one question.
Sure.
Now, that is, of course, of some concern to me that the president doesn't want to testify under oath, and he refuses to appear alone, almost as if he's afraid to appear alone.
Well, not only that, it won't be taped or recorded in any way.
And there'll be no
notes. Formal record of it as well. No, I think it's very disturbing. I think it's embarrassing, really.
I think it is, too. And I share your concern, Ben. Anything else?
Yes, my other question is, on Cheney's secret hearing in front of the Supreme Court right now, are we really going to get access to the notes where Ken Lay and all these, the secret energy commission divvied up Iraq even before the war started? Are we going to ever hear the truth about the Cheney secret energy commission through the Supreme Court, who's hearing it also right now?
All right, well, thank you. I'm going to answer that.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Right, well, I don't know how the Supreme Court will rule, obviously, but it's a very good question. Again, it's a critical question about secrecy. You do have one of the most secret administrations ever, and I believe that information should be open to the public.
Well, it's very, very interesting, and I don't know if you've, having written your own book, I don't know if you've had a chance to read the book by Paul O'Neill, former Secretary of the Treasury, The Price of Loyalty, but on page 96, he talks about attending the meetings of the cabinet there in January and February of 2001, 7 to 8 months before the attack. And what are they talking about? Well, how they're going to attack Iraq, not why we're going to attack, but how we're going to attack Iraq, when we're going to attack Iraq, how will we get the American people to go along with it, and then they brought in the plans for divvying up the oil of Iraq, and this was 7 to 8 months before the 9/11 attack, so you almost get a feeling that maybe the attack on Iraq was planned before the, at least according to Paul O'Neill, page 96 of his book. And incidentally, that's in my latest newsletter. If you want a copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Have you heard that at all?
Absolutely. And in fact, in my book, you can trace the desire, the plans to attack Iraq back to 1992 when Paul Wolfowitz wrote about it, and this is back during the administration of Bush Sr., and Bush Sr. rejected those plans. Wolfowitz and his associates kept trying again and again through the Clinton era to try to get something going. They lobbied candidate George W. Bush in 1999 for it, and they won him over, though he was not terribly forthcoming about it during the 2000 presidential election. And you're absolutely right. According to Paul O'Neill and others, the planning went forward well before 9/11, and on 9/11 itself, at 2 p.m., Donald Rumsfeld said, "Let's go after Saddam Hussein, related or not." And they realized this was a very radical policy. It needed, in their own words, a Pearl Harbor, a catastrophic event like Pearl Harbor, to justify it politically, and they seized 9/11 as an excuse to go after Saddam Hussein, when in fact he had nothing to do with 9/11. He was a brutal dictator, but he had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11.
And I think Dick Clark's criticism of the Bush administration is justified when he said, look, why didn't we finish the war on terrorism? Why didn't we do away with Al-Qaeda, which I think that most of the Muslim world would have sympathized with, instead of inflaming the anger of Muslims throughout the world by attacking a country that had, and every Muslim knows, they had nothing to do with 9/11.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, you know, as you go around the country and talk to people with your book, and, you know, Saudi Arabia appears, as far as I'm concerned, to be one of the major culprits in this whole Islamic terrorist movement, financing the Islamic terrorist movement, and yet we're not addressing that issue. You address that in your book, but this is not being widely addressed in most of the other books that I've read.
Right. Well, you know, it really is extraordinary. You hit upon exactly the issue that's been fascinating in the reception to this book. It's doing quite well, but the mainstream press is ignoring me in a lot of ways. And it's funny because I've gotten enormous feedback on radio stations. I've gotten enormous local press in a lot of ways, but the mainstream TV just doesn't want to touch it. And it seems like the Washington Press Corps won't touch it. It seems like there are two live wires, and no one wants the two to touch each other. On the one hand, there's been a lot of reporting about Saudi Arabia's role in sponsoring terrorism, but no one wants to tie it together, as I do in my book, with the fact that the Bushes are so close to Saudi Arabia. I think there's a basic piece of logic that's been missing from the American conversation, and that is that the Saudis play a key role in sponsoring terrorism. The Bushes are incredibly close to the Saudis, have a very private, special relationship. And given that, how can they possibly crack down on terrorism? And is that perhaps why they've been one reason of many that they've sent all the attention over to Iraq rather than crack down on Saudi Arabia?
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295, if you have a question or comment for Craig Unger. His book is excellent. It really gives you a tremendous insight. In fact, the picture on the front of the book is worth it, the price of the book itself. The look on the Crown Prince's face, he looks like the cat that has just gotten the canary as he walks hand in hand with the President of the United States. And the look on George Bush's face as if, my goodness, I hope nobody's going to see this happening, was the impression that I got looking at the picture.
I think they were discussing gay marriage or something.
Right. Well, under any circumstances, apparently this is a tradition, and we're dealing with people who come from an entirely different tradition. Now, you talk a great deal about the investments, widespread investments of the Saudis in this country. A lot of them are really into expensive airplanes and expensive horses, and they really live a pretty high and mighty life in the United States, don't they?
They really do. It's Prince Bandar, I believe, has a $36 million place in Aspen, Colorado, and that's just one of several residences he has. He has a magnificent place in McLean, Virginia, conveniently located right near CIA headquarters, by the way. He has a fabulous hunting estate, a royal hunting estate in England, where he and George Bush Sr. have gone hunting on occasion. And it really is, the planes they escaped on were extraordinary as well. One of them had gold-plated fixtures in the bathrooms on the plane with huge projection TVs, master bedroom suites, the whole thing. This is inside their airplanes.
You commented that the inside of their planes make the Air Force One, George Bush's plane, look pretty shabby.
Right. Well, one of them I was talking about, he did a $100 million renovation, and I realized that's more than 20 years ago when $100 million could buy you a lot of interior decorating for your airplane, right? I mean the amount of wealth is really just staggering.
Well, but I understand that the Saudis are really not, you know, having some problems, at least financially. Haven't they had actually to borrow a certain amount of money? Is this true or not?
Oh, yeah, their economy is in terrible shape, and the disparity between the great wealth of the royal families and the average man in the street is just growing astronomically. 20 years ago or so, their per capita income was roughly equivalent to the United States. It was like $25,000 or so. Now it's dropped by more than two-thirds to about $8,000 a person. And when you factor in the extraordinary wealth of the Saudi royal family, a lot of Saudi princes expect to make $200 or $300 million a year. And the family itself is growing exponentially. Many Saudi princes have 100 wives. So you can imagine how many kids they have. And then the next generation, it's not like most of us who have two or three kids or whatever in the United States.
Two or three wives, right.
Yeah. So the disparity is growing extraordinarily, and it's creating a huge demographic problems in Saudi Arabia. There's enormous unemployment. They had imported enormous number of foreign workers. Most Saudis simply had not worked. And they're being trained by the madrasas, these extremist schools to hate Christians and Jews and believe that Jews are like dogs and apes is what they say in some of these prayer meetings at these schools. And that's not exactly the kind of training that helps you get a job anywhere that I know of. It does help you become a member of Al-Qaeda, however, and that's really what's so disturbing.
And really, it's this mindset that leads to fanaticism and suicide bombing and traveling, you know, going on into Iraq, as many young Islamic young men are today, to fight the crusader with the idea that, and this is their religious belief, if I die in battle, why, I'm going to go to paradise with all those virgins and wine and this wonderful picture that's been painted for them. And I think that they're in for an awful surprise when they do die, because an awful lot of them are going to die there. But why is Saudi Arabia putting out all this money to train people to kill infidels? Because that's you and me. That's people like George Bush.
Right. Well, it really goes back 300 years, and the history is really quite interesting. You had the marriage of two tribes in Saudi Arabia, the Al Saud side, which is where we get the name Saudi Arabia, and that's where the royal side. And they were a powerful, brutal bandit tribe, and they married into the Al-Wahhab family, and that was a very family of religious extremists. And together they became much more powerful, because you had on the one hand the political power, the brute political force of the Sauds, and then you had the piety, the religious credentials of the Wahhabs, and it became the state religion. So you had the Saudis, the Al Sauds, ruling the country, and that's where we get the royal family. But the Al Wahhabs provided the militant clerics who actually held some of the instruments of power. You have a religious police force, for example, in Saudi Arabia that's known as the Committee for the Prevention of Vice and the Preservation of Virtue. To give you an idea of how extreme it is, and just a year or two ago there was a fire in a girls' public school, and the young girls, I believe they were like eighth graders or so, it happened, they did not have their head coverings on as when the fire started, and as a result they were not allowed to leave the building while the fire was going on, and many of them burned to death as a result. That's how extreme it is. It's really quite brutal.
Well, one of the things that disturbs me is the Wahhab Saudi Arabia is spending hundreds of millions of dollars in the United States within the Muslim community, within our prisons, with many disillusioned blacks, recruiting them into this violent form of religion. Why are we allowing that? Why would we allow them to be recruiting terrorists in our prisons here in the United States?
Well, it's not just that. I mean, one of the extraordinary things was the stories of the election of 2000, and it's largely an untold story that I tell in my book, is that President Bush, the then candidate George W. Bush, was trying to win the Muslim American vote. And as you say, this lobbying effort was going on at big time in the United States. And he sought to win all those voters and ended up, I think very few people realize there are more Muslim Americans in the United States than there are Jews. There are over 7 million. And there's nothing wrong with trying to win over an ethnic bloc for voting, and that's what he was trying to do. But he ended up campaigning with some of the very people you're talking about, among them a man in Tampa, Florida, named Sammy Al-Aryan. And I have a photo of Sammy Al-Aryan campaigning with George and Laura Bush in Tampa, Florida, in March of 2000. And it turns out Sammy Al-Aryan has now been arrested and indicted on several dozen charges of sponsoring Islamic terrorism and being a member of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, who helped fund suicide bombings that killed more than 100 people in Israel, including two Americans.
So we've got this inconsistency, and you've got to take a strong stand. We need somebody who will criticize Saudi Arabia, and we keep telling, well, they're going to change. Sometime real soon they're going to change, and I don't think they're really changing at all. I think they're going to tell us what we want to hear, but I believe it, as far as I can tell, the money is still flowing. Every month or two we're told, oh, everything's going to change. What do you think, Craig?
Well, it's a very difficult situation. I believe we have to have some relationship with the Saudis. The sad truth is we need Saudi oil. We're addicted to Saudi oil. In many ways, it's been a deal with the devil, but I'm scared we may end up with no deal at all. At the same time, I believe we have to crack down on them and say, listen, we want to be allies, but this kind of violence is totally unacceptable. When 3,000 people are killed in the United States, you have to crack down.
Amen to that. Well, Craig, thank you so very much. We really appreciate so much of being with us, and we're looking forward to having that last evening program for an entirely different audience, but I think that'll be later this week. Good night. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let me tell you about some of the four tape sets we have. One special tape set is the Tuskegee Study, and it's four interviews with people who were involved with the Tuskegee Study, or at least who've gone into the background of this really most horrible of all American experimentation. We had the unique opportunity to interview a number of the men who were involved in analyzing the Tuskegee Study, a government-sponsored study where 400 black men were recruited. And they had syphilis, and of course, what they did not understand is that they were not being recruited to be treated, they were being recruited not to be treated, and the government agents did everything they could to block those men from receiving treatment for their syphilis. Call today at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's important that you understand that study so you can better understand the mentality of the men who are working behind the scenes in America today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just talk to you a little bit about the Berkey filters, and if you don't have one, maybe you'd like to give serious consideration to it, because we live in uncertain times. Nobody's telling you that. Everybody's telling you everything's great, getting better. We live in very uncertain times, and if you were ever having to be more resourceful on your own, where would you get your water? Well, with a Berkey water filter, why you can filter pool water, or you can fool pond water, or river water, or lake water, and you put the water in the top, it comes out the bottom, and it's potable. With a Big Berkey, it's made of stainless steel, a standard design, been used for 150 years, ceramic filters packed with activated carbon, and it works very well. There, you can clean the filters over and over again, and they'll last for a very long time. The whole filter is $279, but they're not available in California. However, the Berkey Light is only $199, and it has made of Lexan, so you can see the water level, which we have and we like. You can also realize that the black Berkey filters, there are two of them, but they work much more efficiently than the other filters, and they just take out all the bacteria and all the pesticides and all the herbicides and do a tremendous job, but the filters have to be replaced every 2 to 3 years. Now, neither one of the filters will take out all the fluoride, the lead or the arsenic, but you can get special filters to do that, and those are called the post filters. So if you'd like to get the Berkey Light, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. You want a Big Berkey, call us. And if you get the item through us, you'll get either a free video or a free four-tape set that we have produced. Call us at 1-800-544-8927 now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the point when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we depend upon those of you who listen to our program to help us so that we can continue reaching out 5 hours across the day, bringing the information you're not going to get elsewhere. So if you believe that there is a problem, if you believe we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, and that behind everything are powerful spiritual forces, why not give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, why, we'd be glad to send you one, our March newsletter. We'll give you the background of what happened in the White House at those secret cabinet meetings in January and February of 2001, 7 to 8 months before the 9/11 attack. And we talked about what Paul O'Neill described a little earlier. They were actually talking how they were going to divvy up the oil of Iraq 7 to 8 months before the surprise, so-called surprise attack on the World Trade Center. They needed an incident. The American people did not want to go to war on September 10th, 2001. They were ready to go to war on the 12th of September, 2001. Maybe that's why there were no planes in the air that morning. Maybe that's why Dick Cheney monitored the plane that came in and hit the Pentagon. And if you want verification of that, you can just write to us and ask for Norman Mineta's testimony about what he witnessed on the morning of the attack of the plane that hit the Pentagon and what Dick Cheney was doing as he monitored the flight coming in and did not try to stop it. So the information's out there. You're not getting this from the major media, and that's why we would do what we do 5 hours a day. So if you'd like, of course, to get the information, first of all, we'll be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter, although we hope that you'll want to subscribe. We hope that you'll want to get my video, Iraq, the Untold Story. You can get the video by itself, or you can get it along with a syllabus that has all the documentation for everything we say. You can get my video, The Best Enemies Money Can Buy, going into the funding of the communists, the funding of the Nazis, even the funding of the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War. After all, how was it that a little tiny country the size of the state of Mississippi could fight off the greatest nation in the world for 10 years? And the Americans lost that war. It didn't happen by accident. It was planned that way. And you need to, of course, to get our video, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, and you need to get our 4-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, because we go into the background of what the real reason for Vietnam was. It was never to defeat communism, because we were funding communism all during the that war, and both before and after. We have always funded communism. After all, you have to have an enemy, don't you? How else are you going to rally the people behind the leaders? And as unfortunate as it may sound, this is the reality of what goes on so often here in the United States and in other countries throughout the world. Get the information. Check it out. Could it really be true? If it is, then you need to be involved with us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long exist. I love my country. I do not love that wicked people have taken over control of our government, because they've taken over control of both political parties, and they have an agenda. And it does not involve the survival of America as a free nation. It involves creation of a new world order and a new world religion, impoverishing our people, destroying our society until the people will cry out, give us a ruler to control us. Give us the world government. Let's end wars forever. We can never witness what we witnessed again. And I fear that this is where we're headed. Anyway, we hope many of you will want to get our material. Go to our website at radioliberty.com, listen to our programs, and get the newsletter, get the books, get the videos, get the tape sets. And if you agree with us, then join us in our effort to reach the American people. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.